show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's been a full week of baseball. No more All-Star games to get in the way. So we have a full week of baseball to talk about, some news notes, Royals, all kinds of things happening right now. But first, I, of course, am Jafar. With me, as always, is the man who never takes an All-Star break himself, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very summery Midwestern evening?
Ooh, it's hot out there.
It's a scorcher, as they say. Worse. That's what the kids say these days, right? Scorcher.
I guess. I don't know. You're closer to their age than I am.
Maybe.
I think once you hit 30, it's like...
I don't know. It doesn't even matter at that point.
It's pretty big, chasm.
If you will.
Between those millennials-ish.
Oh, millennials. Oh, wait. I am a millennial. Damn it. What happens?
So it goes.
So speaking of But speaking of that, the Royals are they're certainly going right now. Last time we talked, we had an All-Star break. We had the Royals were at 44-43. They had unfortunately split a few game sweep at the hands of the Dodgers right before the break. But, that's the Dodgers, best team baseball. You're not going to be too upset about that, And they were in two of those games, kind of down to the end there. So feeling pretty good about the Royals coming in to the All-Star break and coming out of the break. And, it's almost a joke now how good of a second-half team they've been, because they really have, for the last 3-4 years, starting in 2013-2014-ish. So, it's looking forward to them coming out of the gate, really sharp, trying to make a run at this thing. But as it stands now, the unfortunate reality is that has not happened. So the Royals started off by losing 2 out of 3 to Texas at home. And then they followed that up by losing 2 out of 3 to Detroit at home to start it up.
Very, very miserably.
Yes. So, I guess they've lost 2 in a row to Detroit. They've still got the third game to play tonight. So they're 1-4 coming out of the break here, putting them at 45-47 on the season. But if you count those last three games before the break, after that really good run they have to put them 4 games above .500, they're 1-7 since. As far as an 8-game stretch goes, you can't. It's hard to get much worse. You'd have to be 0-8 is really your only option. So the offense appears to be have taken a slight step back in the short term. It doesn't appear as sharp in these last few games. Against the Dodgers again, one of those games is against Clayton Kershaw. And, the Dodgers are so good that you can kind of understand a little bit. But, Rangers and the Tigers aren't really known for their great pitching and defense this year. So it's a little perplexing to see just seemingly just kind of revert back to April form, if you will, for the offense. So it's been kind of a rough stretch here. Now, every team goes through these types of things, not necessarily 1-7 bad, but when your team in the Royals position, you typically will. There's the bright spot being similar to what we talked about when we had that three-week stretch where the Royals were essentially made no movement in the division or wild card race. The same kind of principle applies to this discussion now, which is to say, there is the Royals are benefiting right now from being in a division and league really of extreme mediocrity, to put it mildly. So, despite being 1-7 in their last 8 games, they came into the break Was it a full two games? One and a half? I can't remember now. Behind Detroit.
You know.
Either way, one and a half, two games. I mean, they were right there. And after one and a half game or 1-7 stretch, they're only three games back of Detroit. Or I'm sorry, of Cleveland. So
actually, two and a half. Cleveland lost.
Oh, there you go.
Better.
So two and a half games. So they can pick up another half game if they can win tonight against Detroit, and they're same three games back of the wild card right now. So those are very manageable, you know, striking distances for a team to eclipse here, and it's kind of I don't want to say double-edged sword. That's not the right word, but we were kind of talking about it today in the BP Slack chat, where it's just like, you know, it's great that the Royals are still in it because of how mediocre their division in the American League is this year. But at the same time, it feels like a really very large wasted or missed opportunity. You know, I mean, think about it, the Royals 1-7 in their last eight games. Had the Royals gone 4-4, they'd be in first place right now, right? No, half game back. Let's see. Because let's see, if they were
three games better, they would be
tonight. 48-40. No, they would have been tied if they were three games better. Because they're 45-47, so they'd be. And Cleveland was 48, so Cleveland is now 48-45. So as of right this second, if they would have just gone 4-4, they would be a half game in first place. It's not like we're asking them to like win 10 straight games or anything. You know, this is 4-4 is right inside the realm of possibility in an 8-game stretch. So, you know, it's really unfortunate that they haven't been able to capitalize, but at the same time, you know, at least they're in a position where even despite the fact that they've slipped up like they have, they still have a very, very realistic shot at making something happen. Now, whether or not it does, you know, who knows, of course. And before I ask you to talk me down, Mike, I'll talk myself down a little bit from this recent bad spell the Royals have been in. As I recall, and I'm sure you do as well, and many viewers or many listeners probably do, but the Royals in 2014 were at 1.48-50. And wasn't it – they lost like four in a row right out of the break, didn't they, that year? And it was I think it was like they got four games sweep by Red Sox. I want to say – I'm going to –
Yeah, there was that one game where they, I think they threw late in the game, Aaron Crow blew a lead in the sixth because, hey, the sixth inning belongs to Aaron Crow. And that became the kind of the thing for most of the season and carried on still kind of today. So it was a rough series and people were starting to argue about, hey, you got James Shields going to be a free agent. Sell them off, see what you can get. Like, people were starting to talk about that. So, yeah, it was a weird spot to be in. And, well, then the Royals won 15 of 20.
As they are wont to do. You know, the Royals were – wow, this is kind of funny. They were 44-40 in 2014 after 84 games. And then they were 47-45 – but yeah, they got to 48-56, and then, three games to Boston, and then one to Chicago. Am I reading this? What's going on? Yeah. To make them 48-50, and then from there they finished. 48-50, and they were 41-23 to end the season after that. So they went on quite a run. As you mentioned.
Yeah.
So, I mean, your best hope is that they can do something like that again. Because they had, and this is freaky. Okay. So, from the time they were 47-43, and from that point on, or in the next little stretch there, they went, you guessed it, 1-7. So, and three of those losses were to Detroit. Now, mind you, Detroit was a much better team 3 years ago.
True. Detroit won the division that year.
That's very interesting. I mean, it doesn't mean anything besides it's kind of an interesting coincidence, but it is an interesting coincidence. So you can heat up like the Royals did, because at one point they won. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, they won like
they won ten.
Just right out of the gate, they had like a.
Go ahead. Well, they won 10 in a row in June at one point, and that was what really kind of jump started. They were 30-32, or I guess, yeah, they were 29-32, and then they won 10 in a row. They were 39-32. And then they had, let's see, a 1-6, or I guess it'd be a 2-7 stretch. And then they kind of middled around, and they were 47-43, and they had a 1-7 stretch. And that's how they got to 48-50. And then they went, I mean, geez, that was then the big 15. Let's see, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They were 16-3. After that 1-7 stretch. Yeah, that will certainly play. And including three wins against the Giants, wish they would have just saved one of those. You know, you guys take the loss now.
Sure, but if they hadn't, though, they wouldn't have hosted the wild card. I have had that thought many, many, many times and had to complete. Oh, wait.
That's a very good point. I hadn't thought about that. But anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had very, very similar schedule to what they have now. You know, they had Minnesota, who wasn't very good that year. Oakland, who I guess Oakland was pretty good that year. Oh, that was the year they got off to that, like, ridiculously good start.
They went and crazy, and then they just fell
apart, including a final heartbreaking loss at Kauffman. But, like, Minnesota, Colorado, I mean, these teams weren't – so they kind of capitalized on a somewhat weak schedule. Which is what they need to do again. But unfortunately, so far, they're not doing it. And right now they're trying to salvage what's left of this Tigers series. But, you know, outside of just the losses themselves, Jason Vargas now, with his performance before the All-Star game and then now since, he's had two really bad pitching performances. And people are starting to kind of ask some questions. I don't know that it's necessarily a huge concern. Like, I can, around something like that, I can kind of give a pass where I can say, okay, probably anxious to get to the All-Star break, his first ever All-Star game. Maybe he's just looking kind of past the game right before the break. And then right afterwards, you're like, okay, it was an extended break. He probably got thrown out of his routine because of the All-Star game, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not ready to really question Jason Vargas yet. But it's certainly not a positive development that he's had a couple bad performances. And again, the offense has really kind of scaled itself back. I mean, as you watched the last couple weeks unfold, you know, what have you been thinking? Where are you at right now as a Royals fan and podcast host?
Well, I mean, the thing over the last 2 weeks or, you know, week and a half-ish or whatever, you know, they had three games that were winnable, and I would say two that were very winnable. There was that game, middle game in the series against the Dodgers, where they had a 4-3 lead, and later, even though they blew that lead, they had Eric Hosmer on second base with nobody out in the top of the 10th. He didn't advance even to third base, so they didn't score, and then they... you know, walked four guys in a row and lost the game in the bottom of the 10th. And then there was the game where Duffy started against Texas, went 8 1/3, looked great, gave up one ball seemed hit hard all night. But Texas got a couple of bloops and they timed them right. You know, it was as simple as a bloop hit, a sack bunt, and another bloop hit, and that was the only run of the game. So the offense really let him down air. The first game of that Texas series, the first game back, Jason Hamill was thrown a no-hitter going into the sixth with a 3-0 lead, and by the end of it, he was out of the game, and the game was tied. So, you know, just three games just in the last, really, you know, if you think about it, three of the last four games around the All-Star break, you know, that Saturday and Sunday they ran into Kershaw, and then their first game back and second game back, really disappointing.
And those are your three games right there. If they hold on and win those games, or in the case of the Duffy game, show up anything offensively and win it, they're in first place right now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, they've had guys on base here and there. They just haven't gotten that hit. You know, they have, one home run in the five games back Eric Hosmer, and that was in a pretty meaningless situation. Yeah, so, I mean, the offense really hasn't gotten back on track. So, you know, hopefully that's what picks up. But at the Travis Wood wasn't good yesterday. Vargas looked bad. Just really didn't locate. I'm kind of with you in that, you know, the for the All-Star break, you know, that's maybe he is overlooking the particular game. Though his first one back, he's really had a weird disruptive schedule, you know, having to go from L.A. to Miami to Kansas City. But at the same time, you know, every other player who went to the All-Star game or participated in those events had to go through pretty similar, you know, situations. So, you know, I'm not going to give him a full pass, but I get it. You know, it's fine. If he does that next start and he's bad next start and the start after or something, then you kind of start to worry because he's been so good all year. If he's not anymore, you know, Kennedy's pretty average. Duffy's been pretty good since coming back, but, you know, they just don't have a whole lot. Nate Karns isn't going to be available. Travis Wood isn't going to get it done. We've seen the Skoglund and Junis guys, and while I think they can contribute at some point, not right now. You know, it's just I just don't see them doing a whole lot. So, yeah, that does make it kind of tenuous. It's a little shaky right now. But overall, I mean, they're 2.5 games back. They face Verlander tonight, who they historically haven't hit that well, but hasn't pitched that well this year. And the bats showed some signs of life yesterday. So I think there's a possibility that, yeah, maybe they can start to get things turned around. They're going to play the White Sox after this Detroit series, and the White Sox have traded off, you know, 20% of their roster. Like, pretty much, yeah. Like, anybody who's worth a darn, they've traded them off just in the last week. So that's going to be a team that you really feel like you should be able to beat. You should have been able to beat them before. Now you definitely should be able to beat them. So, yeah, I think they've got opportunities. They're going to have to hit, and the starting pitching is going to have to just be better the next time around. And if they can do that, you know, Cleveland has not shown that they want to go and run away with this. Minnesota, I still don't believe in what they're doing there. So, I mean, the Royals have an opportunity. They just have to execute and actually do it, you know. You know, and since we're, it's the 19th, you know, we're about 2 weeks from the trade deadline. Yeah, I mean, that might be something that they have to go do. They maybe find a bat, maybe find a starter, and then you can maybe plug those holes, and you don't have to worry about Travis Wood in the rotation because you've got somebody else. So, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, oh, well, the Royals lost last night. Well, we got to sell. You got to sell now. You trade them all off. No. It's 2.5 games. You can do that in a weekend. You know?
Yeah, so, you know, if, like, let's go back to, just for some perspective here, I want to look at we talked about the 2014 Royals, but let's take a look at the 2015 Royals. Let's see. So if the 2017 Royals were going up against the 2015 Royals for the lead in the division, let's see, after 92 games, the Royals in 2015 were 56-36. So they'd be 11 games back right now. So if that was your situation, then you'd say, let's get moving on this. Let's sell these pieces off and get what we can now. It's not happening this year. But that's not the case. As I said, the Royals are blessed with mediocrity abound in the American League. I mean, there's only three teams in the American League with 50 wins. There's three in the National League East alone with 50 wins.
You mean the West?
Did I say East? Yeah, sorry. Sorry.
You said
sorry.
East, yeah.
Yes, West. Definitely the West.
The East is very, very
bad. Yes, the East is.
The West is.
If not
ridiculous.
For the Nationals, the East would probably be as bad as the AL Central.
Oh, it's. Yeah, they're so bad.
But anyway.
The Mets are bad. The Phillies are bad. The Braves are bad.
Yeah. But even, you know, even if they were in the NL Central right now, the Brewers are 52-44, so the Royals would be, you know, six games back of them. So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, they're – it's not that point yet. And, you know, Mellinger coined the phrase a few years ago, you know, every game is either a parade – what was it? It's either a parade or a
– Parade or a – ooh, what did he – a meltdown?
Yeah, it was meltdown. That's right.
Prater meltdown. Yes. Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, and I think especially now where it's like, okay, we all know that, you know, there's only so many games where this group is going to be together. I think that heightens everybody so that every loss is just like, oh, crap, oh, crap. I don't think they're going to sell. I mean, even if they lose their next 10 games, I still don't think they're going to sell.
If they, the way things are going, if they lost their next 10 games, Cleveland would lose 8, and they'd still be within striking distance. I mean, it's just everyone said, even before the season started, people thought Cleveland was going to go run away and hide with this thing just because the division was going to be so bad. And every time we get to a point like this where we're at now, everyone's like, oh, Cleveland's going to run away and hide with this thing, and they just don't.
Yeah. They just lost to the Giants and they lost to the A's, and neither of those teams are any good.
And Cleveland's got some problems. They've had some injury issues. They've had some players who haven't performed to expectations, who haven't performed like they did last year. You know, their bullpen isn't as dominant as it was last year. I mean, the Indians are by no means a perfect team, let alone – or they're by no means the team they were last year, let alone a perfect team. So, you know, it's certainly – I mean, both – hell, if you're Detroit even, like everyone expects Detroit to sell off here soon, and there's been some talk about possibly trading Justin Verlander, but they're only 5 games back. So, I mean, it's pretty – it's wide open, as they say.
It really is. It's, you know, it's just – you know, I think when you've got 2 months of the season left – and you've got a team that has already, you know, the Royals won 16 out of 22 in June. So, I mean, they've done this before. They've had that stretch. You know, maybe that's the only stretch they get of that, but maybe not. I mean, there's nothing that says that they can't go do that again. And if they do, then, you know, you're looking at a really big turnaround. So it just works out to where all they have to do is, like, get into that kind of spot and see what happens. So I think they're looking right now, they're looking more at trying to fill those gaps on their roster right now where they could use another hitter, they could use another starter, and I think anybody who's in a playoff contention mode is probably going to be okay if you want to throw a reliever their way. And, you know, if that's the case, then, you know, the Royals should give that a shot. You know, I think – I was thinking about this earlier today – where it's just like, you know, there is something to, you know, in this team especially, you know, we talk a lot about how you can't measure the intangibles, but like there's something to this front office giving this group one more run, just one more shot. You know what? Leave it all out there. You understand, yeah, next year is going to be rough. 2019 is going to be rough. A lot of those fans you gained in 2014 and 2015 may not have that same attention span over the next 2 years, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, so go for it now. See what you can do. See if you can add a couple pieces that don't completely wipe out, you know, your promising players coming up through the farm system. There should be some kind of bargains out there that improve you incrementally. You know, if you improve 1% by getting this guy and you improve 2% by getting this guy and you improve 1% by getting this third guy, yeah, you've made some marginal improvements, and those small things over the course of 2 months and a week, that can really make a difference sometimes. So, you know, I think that's what they're looking at is how can we keep the really key guys, if we can, and get some of the more bargain guys out there and kind of help out this roster and give them a second wind and give them some kind of a push. You know, I think this city and this fan base would continue to follow through the end of the year. You know, I cannot see them trading these guys off. I just can't. I mean, there have been so many opportunities where they could have done this. They could have done this after 2015. You know, I think some ownerships would have
cough,
done
that. Marlins, cough.
Right. Where you recognize, okay, these guys have value now where they have a couple of years of before free agency. You can sell them off at their peak, and yeah, maybe you can rebuild and get some really big name prospects. But at the same time, why would you break up a core that just won a championship? And this team, a lot of them have won a championship. The key guys, the Canes, Gordons, Hosmers, Moustakas, Sal Perez, Escobar, those guys all have rings, and they've been together since 2011. So I just can't see the Royals breaking that up unless over the next 10 games they just absolutely collapse and something comes together quickly where they can say, okay, this team gave us an overwhelming offer that very quickly gives us two strong prospects that we can try to build around. So one, I think just the way this team, this front office approaches the roster, they're not going to sell. They're just not. And secondly, I don't think the market's going to compel them to sell. I just don't think that it's going to be anything worthwhile out there when you look at what trades have happened so far in the last week or so. It's just not really much of a seller's market unless you happen to have guys with a lot of years of control left. So the Royals don't have that. They have 2 months of control for most of these guys. So it's not really high demand for the guys that they could maybe trade off.
Yeah, and I heard this anecdote on – I was listening to the A-10 Border Patrol the other day and heard this anecdote from Nate Buchady when he said after the Royals in 2015 made the trades for Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist, he was talking to him about it, and he being Nate Buchady talking to Dayton Moore about it, and he was asking Dayton Moore, is this a message to the rest of the league saying they're here and they're we're going for it type of thing? And his response was, it's not a message to the rest of the league. He's like, it's a message to these players, because Dayton Moore says, I told these players, if you guys are in this position to where we can compete, I will do everything within my power to make sure we can win a World Series. And so he went out and did it, and I bring that up to illustrate loyalty has always been something that's so hugely important and such a big part of what Dayton Moore does and part of why he's been successful almost to a fault at different points, but that's going to come into play here. So, as you mentioned, does it make any sense to break up this team? Not really. And especially when you consider the fact of, well, Dayton Moore's loyal to these guys, and he wants to give them as many chances and the best chances that they possibly can. So, not only are the Royals not going to sell and start trading the pieces off, but they're going to be buyers at this trade deadline. Now, as you kind of alluded to, there's not really much there, there's just the opportunities seem kind of weird. This feels like a weird trade deadline, where just since we were talking about 2015, just thinking about that, there was some, Johnny Cueto, David Price, like there were some big names that year. Everyone knew were available, and they knew those guys were on the market. But this year, it doesn't quite feel the same. You don't have like the huge, as many huge names as it seems we've had in years past. And just to kind of get an idea of what market the Royals are kind of dipping their toe into, let's break down some of the trades that have already happened. We talked about the White Sox and the trades they've made, essentially everyone on their roster. So yeah. Why don't you give a rundown of those trades and all the players involved, and then we can kind of discuss those and see what that can tell us about the Royals roster. And then, just some other – we've had a couple other trades, not necessarily involving the White Sox, that just kind of give an idea of.
Yeah. Well, just looking even, at last year's deadline. Last year there were two players in Baseball Prospectus's midseason top 50 prospect rankings who were traded. Clint Frazier traded from Cleveland to New York, and Gleyber Torres traded from Chicago to New York. So, good job, New York. Obviously, those two guys were traded for Andrew Miller, was in the Frazier trade. Miller's going to be a free agent after 2018 and is a dominant lefty who can throw more than one inning. He's kind of a freak. It's not, I don't know that there's a comparable guy to someone like him. You look at, well, I guess Gleyber Torres was traded for Aroldis Chapman. But I think what turned out was that that trade really looked like the anomaly of the season, because it was like Gleyber Torres is like a number one overall prospect and a bunch of other really good guys to New York for Chapman. But that was it. Two guys in the top 50, and you basically needed two literal left-handed freaks to return those. I mean, just that's how the market kind of bears itself out. And so comparing that to this year, so far there's only been one prospect in BP's top 50 who was traded, and it was Eloy Jimenez, who famously broke a light fixture in a home run derby. That's how strong he is. He's the number 8 overall prospect, according to Baseball Prospectus right now.
Yes.
Traded from the Cubs, along with Dylan Cease. And Dylan Cease is really good, too. He's a really good pitcher. And just a couple of other guys. To the White Sox for Jose Quintana. Thing about Jose Quintana is he's 28 years old. He's owed $7 million this season. So for the last third of the year, you're looking at $2 million-ish. Nothing.
Yeah.
It's
baseball terms.
Doesn't matter. Baseball, $2 million is nothing when you're talking about it. He makes $8.8 million next year, and there are two $11 million team options for him. So basically, you've got 4 years of Jose Quintana for the number 8 overall prospect and another really good prospect. You know, that's where the value is having those cost-controlled guys who are under, you know, a good contract with a bunch of years. And that's, you know, the Cubs got a really good player that they have for the rest of this season if they can get back into the playoff push. And they have him for the next couple of years. So they'll have Lester and Quintana. Maybe they can re-sign Jake Arrieta. And that's kind of that was the big deal. That's the best prospect to get traded, and I suspect that's the best prospect who will get traded. The only guy who really kind of comes close to a top 50 was Blake Rutherford, who was traded from the Yankees to the White Sox last night. And that deal was Todd Frazier, David Robertson, and Tommy Conley. Conley and Robertson have both been really, really good out of the bullpen. Todd Frazier is well known as a big power hitter. Frazier's in the last year of his deal. Robertson has one more year after this season, and Conley is kind of in that arbitration range. But Rutherford is the Yankees' number 4 overall prospect, but he's not in the top 50. And so basically you traded a really good power-hitting third baseman, a really good closer-caliber guy with an extra year, and a really good bullpen arm for him in the top 50, and a couple of other guys. And they had to take on Tyler Clippard. So the comparable guys to that would be Moustakas, Herrera, and I don't know who, Mike Minor, probably not. Someone mentioned Scott Alexander last night talking about the trade. I don't think you would trade any three of those guys and not get back a top 50 guy. So the value there just isn't happening. So that's what the White Sox did. And those were probably the two best groups of prospects that were traded. So using that as a comparison, that's not really much to go off of. It doesn't really give you much incentive to do something. And even so, you know, they had to combine three really good trade chips just to get that group. You know, so it's like if for the Royals, you're basically saying, well, we have to combine these guys who only have so much time left. And that also obviously means you can't trade them separately. So, you know, the White Sox, in order to get a good package of young players, and they've reloaded their farm system dramatically. They have like 10 top 100 prospects. It just doesn't put them in a position where, you know, they could really trade everybody, you know, to this team and then to that team. And, you know, they're basically three guys, one deal, and they get one guy who would be like a top 100. So is that worth trading away Mike Moustakas and Kelvin Herrera to get one guy in the top 100? I just cannot see that. You know, the Royals are in a position where one guy in the top 100 is not going to turn their farm system around. It's not going to take them from 25th overall to 10th.
No.
It's just not going to do it. So that's why, to me, selling doesn't make sense. The market just sucks for it. You know, you're not going to get – J.D. Martinez was traded yesterday. For three guys who just – one guy is in the top 10 in the Diamondback system, and the other guys are just kind of guys. Just not that good, you know. And that's J.D. Martinez, who is, you know, probably a more valuable trade chip than Eric Hosmer would be.
Yep.
You know, maybe you could compare him to Lorenzo Cain. But if you're talking about getting a number three prospect, you know, by that team's rankings, and the Diamondbacks aren't really that great of a farm system, what are you getting out of that? You know, you're just trading him just to trade him. And you know, that's just not what the Royals should really be looking to do. And so just in light of those deals, I can't really imagine why the Royals would be looking to sell, because the whole point is to get those guys who have the potential to be top 50 overall guys, to be really game-changing prospects. And when you consider that Moustakas and Hosmer and Kane are going to get qualifying offers, they're going to turn them down, and they're going to sign somewhere. And at least two of those should bring back a draft pick that follows the first round. And I would think all three could, that all three should be able to get a $50 million contract somewhere, I think. Moose will sign with the Angels. Hosmer will sign with the Yankees, maybe. I don't know. Kane will sign with whomever wants him the most. And the Royals then would end up with four draft picks among the top 40 picks next year. And they'd be able to work with like $12 to $13 million in draft pool bonuses. You know, that's where you can find two or three guys maybe who can jump up and be top 50 prospects within a year. And that, to me, is the most sensible way to rebuild the farm system, which is actually, you know, a change in direction for me, because I think back in April I said, no, I don't want these guys developing players. I don't want the Royals farm system to, you know, ruin these these draft picks. Let's take somebody else's. But the value is just not going to be there. You know, Eric Hosmer for 2 months is not going to return someone you would put in the top 50. Just isn't going to happen. You know, I don't know what the right deal for the Royals to trade him off looks like, but I don't think it's going to come their way. And, you know, so to me, selling is the last thing they should even at all think about. You know, they're better off just riding it out.
Whoa.
And just seeing what happens.
Plus, you know, if we want to talk perspective, and as good as the White Sox farm system may be now, and people are starting to throw around that, you know, best system ever type of thing, which is what people were saying about the Royals back in 2010, 2011. And, you know, if you recall that list, who are the players from that, the Royals list, that ended up being good? Yeah. You know, the three top 10 prospects on that list were Moose, Haas, and Will Myers, and they've all been very good. All three all-stars at different points. And then you've got Danny Duffy, who's been very good, but you also had Christian Colon on that list. You had Chris Dwyer on that list. You had John Lamb on that list. You know, Mike Montgomery has kind of revitalized his career, but he had a lot of struggles, and he's not a starter.
He's only now
doing
it.
Yeah, and it's still as a reliever, not as a starter. Jake Odorizzi is a frontline guy. He's been very good. But, you know, point being that, and they actually, you know, that's pretty solid really from that list. But, you know, your point is you're not going to hit on all those guys. So if he's, like you said, if you want to make this trade and maybe get one top 100 guy, the odds of that one guy, I got to agree with you completely. You know, as much as I was in April ready to just pack it in and what can we get for these guys, you know, where we're at now and seeing how the trade market has developed and what's out there and what you can possibly get, I mean, it doesn't bode well for the Royals, especially because, you know, a lot of the teams that are in the market for somebody have already gotten them, you know. So, you know, the Diamondbacks are going to be less likely to trade for Lorenzo Cain now. You know, all these teams, you know, the Cubs are going to be less likely to trade for, I don't know who they, I mean, if they wanted to, the Royals don't really have a pitcher on them. Jason Vargas, I guess you could say, you know. So
maybe
these teams that had needs that kind of met up with where the Royals would possibly sell, it's not there anymore. And, you know, even – and a lot of teams have already traded off their good prospects, as the ones that are available. So they're better or worse, they're in this thing, and they're right. going for it. And, you know, I'm happy about it. It's going to be – you know, it's been a momentary blip here, and I think they can come out of it. We've seen them, as you mentioned, you know, not only in recent history have they done, you know, the famous 15 out of 20, but, you know, this year they've done that. So this team, as it is constructed now, is capable of doing such a thing. So, I mean, it's certainly they're right in this, and it's going to be it's certainly, you know, there's definitely no reason to sell, and I think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and just there's no way that next year is not going to be that fun. It's not going to be miserable either. I mean, there's no way for the Royals to just completely tear down and tank. You know, they're kind of in a weird position in that next year some of the guys they'll have back, you know, they'll probably be able to graduate like Hunter Dozier and Ryan O'Hearn and Kyle Zimmer probably make it by next year. Maybe, I don't know, Jake Junis will be around. Bubba Starling might even be up. Raul Mondesi, those guys can probably kind of ish hold their own. You know, we're not talking like 504 Royals territory here. You know, so I think the only way that they really get into that, you know, look at the group that won the World Series. Mike Moustakas was a second overall pick. Eric Hosmer was a third overall pick. Luke Hochever was number one overall. Alex Gordon was number two overall. You know, it's just they were in a position where they got these really good draft picks, you know, and now this farm system has basically been a lot of middle draft picks or late draft picks. So it's a lot of like the guys who are ready to step up next year aren't really like high ceiling guys. They're guys who can really hold the place for other guys. The guys that you really want to be watching are like the 18, 19, 20-year-olds in the farm system. The Khalil Lees, the Sully Matias, and those kind of guys. You know, just follow Clint Scholes on Twitter. He raves about some of those young kids, especially the young Latin players that have a lot of talent. And, like, those are the guys 3 years from now, you're going to start wondering when they're coming up. But right now, they're 18 years old. You know, they're not going to make it up yet. So there's going to be some time that the Royals have to take to rebuild. You know, almost completely. You know, their farm system's pretty weak. They have some of these guys who are AAA ready. I count about 9 guys who I imagine we'll probably see in the big leagues next year. Some who we've seen already, Skoglund, Almonte, Dozier. Some we haven't. You know, Bubba, maybe Cam Gallagher, O'Hearn, Richard Lovelady, who is the hot prospect of the day now. So, you know, there's talent there. I wouldn't be thinking you're going to get into the playoffs. I also don't think that, you know, like I said before, one top 50 guy turns it around. You know, you're really looking at, okay, maybe they don't trade guys today to get these AA guys who are going to be ready in a year and a half. That's fine, you know, because you're not really going to be in position where you want those guys, where those guys are going to be that good. Anyway, you know, you're begging those guys to pan out when they just might not. You know, they just might not. And one or two guys, that's really tough odds to make that work. You know, so it's just going to be tough. You got to remember that, you know, Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer and Danny Duffy all debuted in 2011. Sal Perez. The Royals weren't really that good, like really actually challenging something until like August of 2014. So it's going to take some time after this run is over. And the Royals are going to give it one more shot. And not only just does the market, does the circumstances kind of work that way, but, I mean, think about it. We're going to have Mike Moustakas chasing Steve Balboni into August and September. Fans are going to want to watch. You know, they're going to want to see that. They're going to come to games for that. They're going to watch on TV. You're going to be seeing in September, maybe the Royals aren't in it anymore, but you're still going to be watching them. You know, and I think that really helps because the Royals, one, they need revenue, you know, just from pure whatever. They need those ticket sales. But they're also going to be negotiating a new TV contract soon. It will help to show that, okay, we still have some staying power. There's still an interested fan base. Maybe it helps them. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. But I sure don't think it's going to hurt to have those guys around. So even in the really big picture, breaking it out really wide, you know, I think it just benefits them in every possible way to just hold on to these guys, see what happens. And if you can trade Sam Selman and Cam Gallagher and get Marco Estrada, are you going to really be missing Cam Gallagher and Eric Skoglund or whoever? I even said Sam Selman was who I said. See, I can't even remember who I'm throwing away. You know, I don't even remember who I'm trading. You're not going to miss those guys. And nothing against any of those minor leaguers. You know, they're fantastic baseball players considered, you know, with the world population. But there's only so many guys who make a huge impact at the big league level. And they may not. The odds are really kind of against them at this point. But if Marco Estrada can really stabilize the pitching rotation, well, you got to pay that price. It's totally worth doing it. There might even be difficult decisions that you have to make if the right player pops up. You know, Julio Teheran, he's got some years of control left. He's got some talent. He's not really adjusting to the new park in Atlanta very well. Maybe a change of scenery helps, and maybe he works up to be a really good number two, number three guy for the Kansas City Royals. Maybe that costs you Hunter Dozier, or maybe it costs you Miguel Almonte, or a combination of guys. You know, I think you would look at that and really go for it. And so if the Royals have the opportunity to make a trade that helps their big league team, you know, I think they got to really look for it, as long as it's not completely taking out all their high ceiling guys. And, you know, so I don't think it's going to set them back that much, because, you know, really, I just don't. I think 2018 and 2019 are going to be really, really tough years. But if it gives them even a 5% better shot this year, you got to try it. You have to.
Yeah. And I mean, there's just, we talked about it in 2015 and since, you know, it's sure, when you look at things and you kind of say, man, it'd be really nice to have, you know, even though Shamanai hasn't really done a ton, you know, it'd still be nice to have that, as you know, he's still got some upside, you know, and having different players, some of the players who were given up for the Cuetos and the Zobras of the world, that would be nice to have them back. But at the same time, I'd much rather have the championship and that flag out in the outfield. So, you know, if you're in a position where you can make something like that happen again, then you got to take it.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's what it comes down to. You know, if they actually do give them a run or whatever, there you go. And if they don't, you know, I just got to go back to, are you going to get a better impact player by getting them next June in the draft on the first day? Or are you going to get them because, you know, that's who was available for you to trade right now? And like you said, there's only so many teams who need things. You know, the Yankees need a first baseman, but they're probably going to go get Yonder Alonso. You know, right now they've got enough pieces to still go get him. The Red Sox need a third baseman, but, you know, honestly, they could probably find somebody. You know, the Royals are going to be wanting to get their top guy. You know, they're wanting their top prospect. It's not going to happen for Moustakas. We just saw that with Todd Frazier. The Royals don't have the pieces to throw in with Moustakas to get someone's top prospect. So, the best kind of thing that could happen to the Royals if they were to sell is maybe someone overpays for Mike Minor, because bullpen arms sometimes get ridiculous. And even then, you're still just going to be getting some guy. So, you know, like you said, you know, the Diamondbacks don't really need Lorenzo Cain because they just got J.D. Martinez. Well, the big thing early in the year was, oh, well, the Nationals need a closer. The Nationals need a center fielder because Adam Eaton's hurt. Kelvin Herrera and Lorenzo Cain. Well, Michael Taylor's played well in Eaton's absence. And in fact, he's had a better offensive season than Lorenzo Cain. And the Nationals just went out and traded for Sean Dolan, Ryan Madsen, for just a, you know, Blake Treinen, who was one of their kind of closer by committee guys, and a couple of, like, you know, 20 to 30 ranked prospects, you know. So I think the Royals probably have opportunity to look at the market and say, okay, the guys that we would possibly trade just aren't going to bring what we need. And even more so, on the flip side of that, if it's a weak market, you know, get someone cheap. You know, go get Pat Neshek for nothing. Go get him for some top 40 guys. See if Jaber's available. See if Lance Lynn has got a lot of heat on him. You know, Derek Holland, I don't like him, but, you know, again, he'd be better than Travis Wood. So kind of what you're looking at. You're looking at how to play the situation right now to get the best return out of this group. I mean, it's not just as simple as saying, well, we got to sell them, you know, because I think the Royals have to look at it differently. And they're not going to sell them. They're not going to sell anybody. You know, these guys are turning into draft picks. So that's my thought. I go crazy on Twitter because I want to jump into every conversation and just say they're not going to sell.
Yeah, it's
it's a bad inning of sell. And no, they're not going to sell.
Yeah, just people that it just goes back to the parade and meltdown dynamic. You know, it just they're simply
right.
They're not going to do it. And even if they did, half the people, probably more actually, who are saying, oh, sell, would be like, man, you trade off Mike Moustakas and that's all you got? The Royals got
right,
screwed
right.
or whatever. It's like, you know, let's just enjoy it. You know, it was same deal as when they struggled in like 2015 in August a little bit, you know, where people were like, oh, Royals are going to have all this goods. They peaked too soon. They're going to lose in the first round of the playoffs.
Right.
All over. Season's over. Let's sell everything now. It's like, come on.
Can't just
like,
flip the switch. Well,
just sit back and, you know, be a fan and enjoy it. And, you know, 2018 is going to be rough. 2019 is going to be rough. But you know what? We've been through so much as fans. It can't get any worse than what we've already seen from the Royals.
It really can't.
And, you know, technically, it can't get any better than what we've already seen either. I mean, I guess they could win more games and a World Series, but you know, I mean, we've seen the pinnacle, and we've seen literally the peak and literally the valley from an organization. So, I mean, you know, it's okay to just sit back and enjoy the ride and hope for the best.
Yeah, and I you know, I mean, what we do here is we try to analyze things and think about them and think about trends and the numbers and all that stuff. So I get it. You know, I get why the fan base would be looking at some of that stuff and thinking about it. But at the same time, no matter what I think, the Royals are going to do what they're going to do. You know, so while I want to think analytically, I want to be realistic and everything, I also just want to be a fan and hopefully the Royals win games. And I like it when they win games, and hopefully they win enough to where they can play in October. And if they win enough where they can play in October, they have a shot. That's all they got to do is just get there. That's what it comes down to. Just get there, see what happens. And they still got a shot to do that. So I think the selling talk is premature. I thought it was premature in April. Not that we couldn't think about it, but it was just it wasn't the time yet, and the Royals showed that, okay, give them some time.
Yeah, I mean, there was –
they could figure it out.
It was premature, but the logic was there to say that, hey, they're doing really poorly, and if they continue to do really poorly for the next month or two, then they're definitely going to be in a position where selling is the right option. But – things have changed. They did really well. They're only a few games back. I mean, we're talking 7-8 games back earlier in the season. They're way closer now. Everything's much different now. The context of the situation is much different, and the context tells us now there's simply no way they're going to sell.
No, I mean, they're not. The temperament of the front office, every other factor involved, it's not going to happen.
No.
Not going to happen. So, it's not worth worrying about. Just see what they do. You know, and I would even venture to say that just about anybody in the farm system is probably expendable. I mean, obviously, you don't want to, like, take 5 of your top 15 and trade them all just to get one reliever. But, you know, if you got an opportunity, I don't know who the best trade target right now is out there. J.D. Martinez is probably, like, the dream of someone you can get. But, you know, there's I probably at this stage wouldn't want to trade like Raul Mondesi, but I wouldn't have any problem trading just about anybody else, you know. I just because, you know, it takes more than just one guy to do it. And especially if it's like a 6-17, 18-year-old kid, well, what are the odds they're going to actually make it? I mean, so if someone comes calling and they want one of those really high upside guys, wouldn't bother me that much. I wouldn't enjoy it, but, you know, I would say, yeah, Sully Matias, if he's what it takes to get a reliable starter who can go six innings every day or every start, do it, you know, go for it. I guess that's one of the benefits of having a pretty weak farm system is that, well, there's not really any guys that you covet that are, that you feel are untouchable. So I guess that kind of works. It's kind of like, you remember in 2012 where it's like all these names come bandying about. And when they finally traded, Will Myers and Mike Montgomery and Jake Odorizzi for James Shields and Wade Davis, it felt like a complete dagger because those were such big names for so many years, you know, as someone following the farm system.
And
as it turns out, well, you know, they were good. They're all good, but...
Yeah, I mean, and since they weren't part of that 2011 crew, the hope was, okay, that 2011 crew, Hosmer, Moustakas, Duffy, Salvador Perez, would help them get there, and then those other guys would come in and fill in the remaining gaps, and that's when they would take off. And so exactly, yeah, it was kind of mm-hmm. just like that, just that gut punch. Oh no, is this the right decision?
We
you know?
Did it every
on this
show,
myself included. I thought it was the wrong decision. I was, you know, and we talk a lot about on this show about process versus results. I still think it was the wrong decision, but I can't argue with the results. So I'm not going to go back and kill Dayton Moore for making that decision. He took a chance. And it paid off, you know. Would you rather have Jake Odorizzi and Will Myers right now? Sure, but I'd also rather have the World Series and the American League pennant that James Shields helped him win. So, you know, that's again, can't fault the process was different than the results. The results worked out, and it wasn't like the most lopsided thing ever. You know, there was still a chance that it could have done exactly what it did, which was propel the Royals to the World Series, and that's what happened. So, you know. It's one of those. It's always a tough situation to be in when you've got that. But you know, if you can take a gamble and it pays off, then you know you've got stuff. You know, you're making history if you're winning pennants and World Series and all that stuff. So, but one thing I kind of want to hit on is our final topic here. You did you mentioned Clint Scholes and how everyone should follow him on Twitter, specifically if you're looking for prospect info. And kind of we've talked a little bit about what the Royals kind of prospects are for the future. But you know, recently Clint Scholes has released his top 30 list on bpkansascity.com. So go check that out for sure. BPKansasCity.com. But Mike, why don't you give kind of some of the highlights of it and break it down a little bit for people so they know what they'll what to look for when they start reading it? Because Clint always says great stuff. We had him on the show a little bit after the draft, and I mean, if there's anybody in any non-professional writer or you know employee of the Royals that has a better grasp on the Royals farm. Because Clint is feet on the ground in Omaha. He's talking to scouts around the country, high school players, different coaches in different organizations. I mean, it's hard to get more hard to get better information than him. So what I want to give them kind of a little bit of breakdown on what to look for that.
This is he put this out not it was a couple weeks ago. I had to go digging for it a little bit on the site, but it's really easy to just click on Clint's name. He does Diamonds in the Rough every day, which is a daily minor league update. So you can find his stuff just kind of through his author name. But you know, he went in and added some of the draft picks, Nick Prado and MJ Melendez are a couple guys, and a lot of guys, especially that Latin class, really improved their stock. You get a guy like Nicky Lopez, who you know, last year was, you know, just kind of a guy, 30th pick in the preseason, even 30th ranked prospect in Clint's rankings before the season started, all the way up to number four, because he's just he's been playing so well. And as you have heard from Lonnie Goldberg when Clint talked to him, you know, really they love his approach. They love the way he plays the game. And then just, you know, other guys, you know, Skoglund rates pretty well. Josh Staumont fell a little bit. Chase Vallot, Ryan O'Hearn, some of those guys, you know, still top 10 kind of guys. I'm not going to give away the whole list, but he's got a good breakdown of kind of, you know, the main thing to look for each of these guys. It's something I've got it printed out because I like paper. And I just always have it on hand for easy reference. So when I'm looking at something like these trades, you know, that have happened. Okay, well, who's Clint's number three prospect for the Royals? Well, it's Khalil Lee right now. Okay, you could see trading Khalil Lee for J.D. Martinez. You could totally do that. Or Nicky Lopez traded for, you know, in a package to get Todd Frazier and the other guys. Sure, you could totally see that. So that's kind of how I'm using it, especially at the trade deadline, just to kind of get an idea, you know, just who's going to be in there. And just even further, you know, I just kind of jotted down guys who might come up in 2018 who are in this top 30. I count nine different names. You know, so it gives you an idea who's coming up, you know, where do they rank? What kind of upside do they have? So I would recommend that as a really nice bookmark for your digital viewing pleasure. Or you can print it out like I do. You know, like I said, it's right here. I got notes scribbled on it. So I would go find that. I'm going to make myself a note right now to link that on BP Kansas City on this episode. So if you're on bpkansascity.com listening to us right now, or if you've downloaded, well, you can go back in the link. I'll put it in here. So you can refer back to it.
In the breadth of our discussion, we've talked about, you know, all these different names that came up and got traded and all that stuff over the last 4 or 5 years for the Royals. Well, you know, if you're looking for that next batch of names that could get traded or that could come up and be part of this organization and for years to come, you know, it's that they're – there's some of them that are going to be on that list that you're going to be very familiar with eventually. So, you know, that was the funnest part about when I was writing for Kings of Kaufman with you, Mike, back, you know, years, God, 6 or 7 years
back
ago
in
now,
the day.
Before we even had this podcast,
yeah.
Before the Royals were good. But, you know, even back then when I was writing about the minor leagues and stuff, one of the funnest things for me was just seeing all of that, seeing players as they progress through the system and seeing them within a year. And, you know, I wasn't like Clint Scholes or anything, you know, just in Kansas City, but I would try and, you know, get in touch with people around the different levels and different scouts across the country, looking at minor leagues players and stuff and see what their opinions were on different players. So it was always kind of interesting to see how those players developed and what scouts said, you know, was developing in terms of which pieces of their skill set versus what was stagnating or getting worse and that kind of thing. So, you know, if you're at all interested in that and you want to see, you know, what the Royals' prospects are, both literally and figuratively moving forward, then Clint's your guy. So go to hit that link from where you saw the site, or if you happen to have it auto-downloaded on, you know, iTunes or whatever, then just go to BP Kansas City and search on Clint Scholes, and you'll find, you know, all his diamonds in the rough stuff, which is great, more minor league stuff, but you'll find his articles as well. So definitely check that out, and we will we'll wrap it up with that this evening. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to visit our sponsors, of course, Kelly's Westport Inn. Don't have a good day. Have anything coming up?
I don't have the particular dates in front of me, but they do have, I believe, a 70th anniversary coming up at some point.
That
need to find that out specifically and push that out. But yeah, they, you know, they're founded in 1947, so 70 years. So that's, I'll have to figure out the date on them and I'll share it with the world.
Absolutely.
Everybody will find
out. And, so we'll definitely be plugging that as it gets closer. But be sure to go to Kelly's, whenever you're heading out to Westport, always a good time. Visit BP Kansas City. We talked about Clint and all the good stuff he's got on there, but he is far and away from the only writer that we have on that site. We have a ton of great writers all around the Royals blogosphere, people that are plugged in, who know what they're talking about, and always have interesting topics that we put up and talk about. And as we get closer to the end of the week, you'll have Friday notes if you want to get some from Dave Leske, if you want to get some insight into the coming weekend and the Royals matchup. And hopefully, you know, the Royals, hopefully it's their matchups are looking pretty good here. I mean, we talked about it before the break. They've got a good schedule in terms of difficulty that opens up for them quite nicely. If they can just, you know, not do things like lose two games in a row to the Tigers, who aren't very good, and, you know, lose two out of three to the Rangers. I mean, you know, they've got two more games against the Tigers, and then the White Sox are traded everyone. So, you know, go even up this series against Detroit, and then go sweep the White Sox, who have clearly given the white flag for the season. You know, I mean, win five straight games, they'll be 50-47, and they'll be well on their way. So that's pretty simple. So that's the Royals' homework for next week, and your guys' homework as listeners is to go to BP Kansas City, go to Kelly's, have a good time. We will be back next week with more Royals baseball and hopefully more wins to talk about. But until then, be sure to visit our sponsors, and we will see you next time. So thanks for stopping by, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816. Limitosis. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.